So I have a few questions for you. And let's see. I'm going to put these on the screen, and I hope that you will write them down in order to think about them later on. Because you cannot answer these, I don't think at least, without giving some thought to them. But they will certainly help to get into my message. Question number one. Who is the smartest person you know? Who is the smartest person that you know? Not just talking about somebody like Einstein, but somebody you know. Question number two. Who is the wisest person you know? Who is the wisest person you know? Number three. What is the difference between being smart and being wise? What is the difference between being smart and being wise? Number four. How do you recognize a wise person? If you named or have somebody come to mind who's the wisest person you know, how do you what makes them wise? Next question. How do you choose who you will go to for advice? How do you choose? Not who do you choose, but how do you choose who you will go to for advice? And the last one is not a question exactly. It's more a complete this sentence. I would be much wiser if. So, six questions, five questions, one statement to consider. If you didn't get them all down, check with somebody else or come see me after services. There are reasons behind these questions, obviously. The first two together, who is the smartest and wisest persons that you know? The reason I ask that question is that we usually, as human beings, we think about people in terms of their smarts, their intelligence. But we far less often think about people in terms of their wisdom. How often do you think about somebody in terms of how wise they are? Few people in the world evaluate other people through the eyes of wisdom. But how important is that? And why should we do that? Let me give you an illustration about some way we might imagine it. Let's say that we had an announcement today that Mr. Burnett had given an announcement where he said, I want to meet with all of the teens right after services, right up here on the stage. And when I have no idea how many there are, 60, 70, 80 of you come up right after church and you stand on the stage with him. He says to you, okay, a couple of you came to me this morning and told me that we have a situation here among the teens that we need to deal with and change. It seems like some cliques have developed over the last few years at summer camp, and it spills over into every regional event that we have. And there are some jealousies and some put-downs and some exclusions of people and hurt feelings and getting upset, and it's causing some problems. So here's how we're going to solve this. Here's how we're going to solve it. Me, Mr. Burnett talking, I'm going to go get my belt and some snacks. By the way, if you do decide to dance tonight, you might swing by the house and just, you know, pick up that belt. Now, he said, I'm going to go get some snacks, but I want all of you to stay right here on the stage, and I want you to select from among yourselves seven people, seven guys and girls, doesn't matter how many of each, and I want you seven to come up with a solution to this problem. You seven are going to come up with a solution, and when you have the solution, come find me, and let me know what you're going to do. Now, if you're part of the group of teenagers here, and you're told to pick seven people to fix the problem, who would you pick? What qualifications would you look for? Who would be qualified to solve this? And why bring up this as an example? Well, let's go to Acts chapter 6. real life story here in Acts chapter 6. The church had just started. They had some problems that arose in the church. In fact, this is the first one that is ever mentioned. Acts 6 and verse 1, "Now in those days when the number of the disciples was multiplying, there arose a murmuring against the Hebrews by the Hellenists." Now the Hellenists were the Jews from the Greek world. They weren't quite as good as those from the Hebrew world. And the problem was their widows were being neglected in the daily distribution. "Then the 12 summoned the multitude of disciples and said, 'It is not desirable that we should leave the word of God and serve tables. Therefore, brethren, seek out from among you 7 men of good reputation, full of the Holy Spirit and wisdom, whom we may appoint over this business. But we will give ourselves continually to prayer and to the ministry of the word.'" The problem of the widows being neglected was a problem itself, but then it was creating a new problem, a bigger problem, and that was it was disunifying people. There were cracks in the relationships in the church, and it threatened the chemistry of the entire group here. And it was a problem that needed to be fixed. Someone was messing some things up. Some people saw it, and so they took it to the apostles. What is so interesting, did you notice the 12 did not describe in any way how to fix the problem? They did not say how to fix the problem. They never gave any possible solution. They only described the type of person that needed to go to work on it. That's all they gave. They didn't say, "Well, why don't you build a suggestion box and give everybody a day to submit their solutions?" Or, you know, "You could Google conflict resolution and probably come up with some ideas and maybe form a truth and reconciliation committee and, you know, we can get this done." No, they offered no solution. The only direction they gave was what to look for in people. What do you look for in people? They understood a critically important principle. If you have a certain kind of people, they will be able to come up with certain kinds of solutions, workable solutions. This was what was really important. Now, what I left out of the scenario with Mr. Burnett telling you was to give you this list of qualifications. The qualifications the disciples were given were they had to pick people who had a good reputation, were full of the Holy Spirit, and wisdom. Wisdom. These qualities are just as much the solution to problems today as they were back then. Now, in the situation we described here, Mr. Burnett talking to all the teenagers, since most of the teens aren't baptized, he might change it a little bit. He might say something. He might not say full of the Holy Spirit, but we also know that as young people, God's Spirit can be with you before it is in you. But he could say, "Choose some from among you who are committed to following God's way. Pick 7 who have a good reputation, who are committed to following God's way, and have wisdom." Could he say that to a group of teenagers, people who have wisdom? Would he be able to say that? Well, we'll come back to that in a moment. I suppose he could say, pick juniors and seniors only because they're the oldest, or pick 7 of the most popular, and that way whatever they decide everybody will like because they like them. That usually works, right? He could say, pick 7 who are making the best grades in school because we need some smart people working on this. He could say, pick the 7 best drivers because they tend to be careful. He could say, pick the 7 best ones who give the best speeches in teen club because they'll communicate well with everybody. He could have said, pick the 7 best dancers because they're going to have a big problem to dance around with this one. He could have said all sorts of things. There's nothing wrong with any of those things. But they really are not the keys to dealing with and fixing problems and leading in the right way. I can't think of better qualifications of what they were given in Acts 6 to what would be given in a scenario like I just described. And that is, pick people who have a good reputation, who are led and affected by God's Spirit, and they have wisdom. Types of people. Now, all of you teens know each other pretty well. You may not be in the same church areas, but you know each other pretty well. Who would you pick? Who would you pick with those three criteria? Any names come to mind? Would you be picked? Would you be picked? Who are the wise among you as teenagers or young adults? The next question, why ask that question? What's the difference between being smart and being wise? What is the difference between being smart and being wise? It's an important question because as you live life, you're going to see a lot of smart people do dumb things. A lot of smart people do a lot of dumb things and make unwise choices. I've seen some brilliant, accomplished people, people who would blow the top off of the SAT scores, do some of the dumbest stuff. I've seen smart people have hold my beer and watch this moments. I've seen accomplished people make very unwise choices. Deeply affects their living skills, helping others live productive lives. I have seen church members drink in the knowledge of God, take notes at church, quote scripture, and then go out on Saturday night and do something really dumb. I've seen ABC and FI students sit for 9 months and have their heads packed full of the knowledge of God and then turn around and do some very unwise things. I have spent time on my knees talking to God about some situation and sorrowfully expressed to Him, I am so sorry, I knew better. And I still did something so stupid. In other words, you can have the knowledge and you can have the smarts, but not have the wisdom at the moment to discern what needs to be done. Being smart is about knowing stuff. Okay? Being smart is about knowing stuff. Being wise is all about how to use the stuff you know. How to use the stuff you know. Knowing what to do, what not to do. Knowing about people. Knowing about character. And understanding things like that. The third question, or the next one to come to, how do you recognize a smart person? How do you know one when you see one? When you read the story about Jesus' birth in Matthew 2 and verse 1, it says, there came wise men from the east. Well, who told them they were wise? How did people know they were wise? Who determined that? When do you ever hear anybody talk like that today? Did anybody show up at church today and said, I heard a wise political ad on TV this week. There was a wise man who entered the scene. Nobody talks about wise people, wise men. Why don't we? Why don't we think in those terms? We just don't tend to describe people as wise. Why not? Is it because maybe we don't value that as a society? That we don't grow up thinking in those terms? Political ads today, no one talks about how wise they are. They talk about how smart they are. They talk about how their programs that they've thought of is going to save the world. But wisdom just doesn't seem to be a quality that we think about today. Although what we need more than anything on the political scene of the whole world are some wise people. We really need some wise people today to lead the world. We just don't think about it. We'll get to some of the markers of wisdom in just a little bit. The question about who do you go to ask for advice? The reason I ask that is that there will be a lot of times in life when you have to ask for help. You have to ask somebody, what do you think? What should I do? How should I handle this? Well, who do you go to? A lot of people don't think about this very often. They don't think about seeking wise people. And so the question was, how do you choose? When you have to ask somebody for advice, what is your process of selecting and eliminating certain sources, potential sources? What's the criteria? Remember, smart is not the same as wise. Smart is not the same as wise. Friends are not always the same as wise. Not always. A couple of years ago, a friend of my grandson, Kai, called the house. My daughter answered the phone, and this little boy said, "Hi, Mrs. Washington, is Kai there?" And she said, "Yes, he is." She said, "How are you doing?" And he said, "Not so good." He said, "I have a girl that I like, and this other boy at school is trying to steal her, and I need Kai's advice on what to do. Can he come over and help me?" Kai was 11 at the time. We call him the love doctor now. Well, none of us would say that he was wise in the ways of love. But that's who his friend looked for advice. But you know what? I've seen older people do it too. There's a classic example in the Bible about a man named Rehoboam, Solomon's son. He took over, and this first crisis he faced after his dad died was people coming to him and saying, "You know, your dad made life pretty hard for us for a long time. Can you take your foot off the pedal a little bit and just ease up? We would really appreciate it if life could be a little less stressful for us." Rehoboam said, "Let me think about it for 3 days and come back to me." So it says he consulted the elders that stood before his father Solomon. He's getting advice. That's great. And he goes to the elders of his dad. And he said, "How do you advise me to answer these people?" And they spoke to him and they said something really interesting. He said, "How should I answer them? What should I say to them?" And they didn't answer him that way. All they said was a principle. They said, "If you will be a servant to these people today and serve them and answer them and speak good things to them, they will serve you forever." They didn't tell him what to say. They told him what to be. You ought to be a certain way. Here's the way to think about this. Here's the way life works. If you will serve them, they'll serve you. This is the way it works. Went right over his head. He goes to another group. It says he consulted the young men who had grown up with him. "I'm going to go ask my friends. They're not like you old guys. I'm going to go ask my friends." And they said, "Well, here's what you say. If you think my daddy made your yoke heavy, wait till you get it from me. My little finger is going to be thicker than my father's waist. You think you had it bad? My father got you with whips. I'm going to get you with scourges." He said, "You got to get these people in line." Well, that's the advice he took. And it blew up on him. Blew up in his face. Bad, bad choice it was. He had wisdom laid out in front of him, but he had to choose. How did Rehoboam go about choosing who he would get advice from? That's how important it is. Now, the last one was, complete this sentence, "I would be much wiser if..." The reason I ask you to think about that is that we often do not process the events of life from the standpoint of trying to be a wise person. For one thing, we're just not encouraged to do that in life very much. Yet it's one of the most important qualities of life you can have. Once again, there's so little focus on wisdom in society and in the world around you today. Where can you go to find wisdom? Where can you go and how do you know I'd be a wiser person if? You can't say, I'd be a much wiser person if I sign up for that class my junior year in high school on fundamentals of wisdom. Or then my senior year, I can take intermediate wisdom. And by then, when I go into college, I can jump right into Advanced Wisdom 101 and Applied Wisdom 202. And man, I'm on my way. By 22, I am wise. Doesn't work that way. Where do we have wisdom classes today in school? Where do you get anything that has to do with things like the art of living? Stuff like that. So where do you go? How do you know how to become a wiser person? You're sort of left on your own to figure it out. All right, if you're a younger person, you may be thinking, okay, where's he going with this? Why is this so necessary? Wisdom, wisdom, wisdom. We're talking about old people, grandmas and grandmas, Yoda, Gandalf, you know. That's what wisdom looks like to a lot of people. So why is this necessary to think about for everybody? Everybody. Well, simply this. Let me put it this way. Do you ever have choices to make? That's pretty much the reason why it's important. Do you ever have choices to make? If you do, you need wisdom. You need wisdom because it's all about choices in life. And since everybody has choices to make every day, wisdom becomes a very practical necessity in every person's life, starting at a very young age. I would like for you to walk out of here today thinking about these terms very often. How can I become a wiser person? How can I become a wiser person? Not just a smarter person, but wiser. How can I get it? How can I make it part of my life? It's what we're going to talk about quite a bit in the rest of this sermon. Now, I want to give you at the end of this message some very practical, hands-on, doable information, some practical things to do that will, in fact, put you on the road to becoming a wiser person. Smarter, too, but also wiser. Let me give you a little test first to see how important this is to you. What I have here is a bar of silver. It's 10 troy ounces of silver. 99.9% silver. Yesterday, the spot silver market was trading at $16.76 an ounce. So this little piece of metal here is worth about approximately $167. If I put it up here right now, put it on the stage and said, I'm going to give you 1 minute to decide. If anybody wants it, you can come down here and have it. Pick it up and take it. It's yours. But if you take it, you have to walk out of here and go sit in the parking lot for the next hour. You don't get to hear anything that's said. That's the deal. Now, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but in your mind, what would you do? It could be really tempting. Don't forget, I said, if I put it up here. I have learned a thing or two. Because I know somebody would say, I'm going to go get it, and then I can listen to the tape. I can watch the video later. Now, the reason I ask that, consider this, Proverbs 16:16. Proverbs 16:16 makes a statement here that a lot of people might not really believe. Proverbs 16:16, how much better it is to get wisdom than gold. Now, if this was gold... I just wish it was, because gold is going for how much these days? Lots of money. And to get understanding is to be chosen rather than silver. Interesting word. It's a choice, it says. We can choose silver or we can choose understanding. We can choose gold or we could choose wisdom. It's a choice. This is called, perhaps different things, but it's called the temptation of immediate gratification. The temptation in thinking about, would I want that silver? It's the temptation of immediate gratification. You can have it now. There's an immediate benefit to you. I mean, you grab this piece of silver, you're $167 richer. Unless you know a little bit about trading silver. If you took it down somewhere to trade it, you're not going to get full value. That's the problem. But still, you'd say, well, I can still get a lot. Immediate gratification. Get something valuable now by trading for something that God says is more valuable later. Boy, that's one of the biggest factors in choices. Some of the biggest choices of life come down to this immediate versus long-term gratification thing. And how do we have the wisdom to know what the choice ought to be at that time? That's why wisdom is so important. Smart people do get ahead in life, but wise people get farther ahead. Wise people get farther ahead, and not just monetarily, maybe not even most importantly, monetarily. They get ahead in so many things that make for a rich life. Maybe not a rich pocketbook, but a rich life. I'm going to tell you some things today that, if you will do them, will help you in ways that will help you get so much more out of life than this bar of silver ever could. You can blow through this bar of silver tonight very easily, really easily, at one of those 30 restaurants within 300 yards of where you're eating or meeting. You can go through that kind of money real fast, but what we're going to give you can last you for a lifetime. Because some of the things we're going to talk about will give you wisdom and understanding. If there is one thing that the Bible stresses so much, it is the value of wisdom. I did a word search this morning in the Bible on these issues, intelligence and wisdom, so on. The word smart is mentioned in the Bible zero times. You won't find the word smart in the Bible. I said, okay, well, how about other words? Clever, zero. Intelligent, once. Intelligent is mentioned one time. In Acts 13:7, it mentions a fellow named Sergius Paulus, an intelligent man. That's the only time intelligence mentioned in the Bible. Now, shrewd. What does shrewd mean? Well, in the classical Greek, it meant street smart. I'm just kidding. That's not classical Greek. But that's really what shrewd means. It sort of means you're smart with the street savvy, you know. Somebody has some savvy. It's a type of intelligence. Shrewd is mentioned five times. Okay? I said, okay, well, let's expand it further. Let's look up knowledge, because knowledge is associated with being smart. Being smart means you have a lot of knowledge. Well, knowledge is mentioned 165 times. I think, okay, that's pretty good. Except when you start looking up a lot of those verses, they don't have to do with the people who are knowledgeable, but with information. It's just information. But it's not used a whole lot about people who have a lot of knowledge. So I thought, well, that was interesting. I looked up wisdom. The word wisdom is mentioned 235 times. The word wise is mentioned 221 times. So both of those words, wisdom and wise, are mentioned over 450 times in the Bible. You can also think about wisdom through the eyes of its opposite meaning. Look up fool or foolish. Foolishness. There's 196 verses to study. Seems like God puts a lot of emphasis on wise versus foolish. There's so much more in the Bible than there is to do with the simple intelligence. Why the stress? Why the stress on this? Knowledge is good. Being smart is good. There's nothing wrong with those things. I'm not putting them down. They're good to have. But God stresses wisdom. God talks about wisdom all the time. In fact, many of the stories in the Bible and so many stories in life are stories not about the consequences of people being smart and intelligent, but the consequences of them being wise or foolish. That's what the stories of life are primarily consist of. People making wise or foolish choices. That's why it's important. Again, why the stress on wisdom? Because a lot of smart people have made dumb decisions. Now, let's go to Proverbs chapter 4. Certain concepts start jumping out in terms of importance. If you just start looking up some of these words and looking up the verses and see, well, okay, what does it say about wisdom? Proverbs 4 and verse 5. There's a sort of a sense of urgency about this. Solomon says, get wisdom. Get understanding. How else can you word it more effectively? Get this, exclamation point, get it. That's interesting. The Proverbs were written by Solomon to his son. Now, if he'd had a daughter, they would have been written to his daughter. The points are interchangeable, male to female. How old do you think his son was when Solomon started collecting and passing these on? How old do you think Solomon's son would have been? 2? 22? 42? I don't know. Rehoboam would have done well to have listened to his daddy's words. We don't know how old Solomon's son was when he was collecting these. So let's ask it a little different way. Since he's really out of the picture now, at what age should a child start paying attention to this concept? What would be a good age to start paying attention to verse 5? Get wisdom, get understanding. At what age should a person begin a quest for wisdom? What would be a good age for someone to start putting attention on this? At what age should parents start talking to their children about this? In verse 1, Solomon wrote, "Hear, my children, the instruction of a father, and give attention to no understanding." And in verse 3, he said, "When I was my father's son," who was Solomon's dad? "When I was my father's son, tender and the only one in the sight of my mother, he also taught me and said to me, 'Let your heart retain my words, keep my commands and live.'" Sounds like it's at a pretty young age. How old should a child be when they start having their minds put on concepts of growing in wisdom? Well, I would say as soon as they can begin to understand it. There are certain age-appropriate levels that they can understand certain things, and they will continually be growing, but it ought to be part of their lives. A heavy focus on getting wisdom and understanding, where we live in a world that stresses getting information. Get knowledge. Learn all sorts of things. Along with that, it's so important to be stressing, get wisdom. Get understanding. Chapter 1, verse 1, we read the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. So all this book, the next 31 chapters that follow after this, why is it here? To know wisdom. The Proverbs are here to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, to the young man, knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. It says man here in verse 5, but you can say, so will a wise child. A wise child will increase learning and understanding. This is one of the most important elements of child rearing that a parent can pursue, is to help our children become wise. Wise. Many of you here today are teenagers. There comes a point where you start owning concepts like this, where you say, okay, my mom and dad don't have to keep telling me I need to do this because I understand. This is something I really want to do. I want to add. It's one of the smartest things in life you can do is to pursue wisdom. Let's go back to chapter 4. Chapter 4 and verse 7. Wisdom is the principal thing. There are a lot of things. It says wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And in all you're getting, get understanding. That's a fine statement, but you can flesh it out a little bit more. The statement is made, but then God expects us to use our brains to think this through a little bit. You can fill in the blanks on some statements like this. Wisdom is the principal thing because it's a statement here, and it's not an untrue statement, but why? If you really want to dig deeply into understanding scriptures, ask yourself things like that. Wisdom is the principal thing because, and then think about that. In all you're getting, get understanding so that, why is it important? The more you think about it, the deeper your mind goes on some of these principles that God has put in here. Well, I want to fill in those blanks because that's what the rest of the chapter deals with, explaining. Basically, it's what the first nine chapters of Proverbs really stress. The first nine chapters of Proverbs give example after example of why wisdom is so essential. And then beginning from chapter 10 verse 1 on, it starts giving a lot of individual Proverbs, these concepts of life. After you read it through, you get the idea that probably the simplest and most straightforward definition of wisdom is this: the ability to make godly choices in life. Now, there may be other ways to define it, but I would submit to you that the ability to make godly choices in life is at the heart of a wise person. Being a wise person. Good choices. Beneficial choices. Rewarding choices. Appropriate choices. We will see this develop throughout the book. But also if you think about life. If you think about life and the way life works in people's lives, you will see that. By the time you're 13, you've been around long enough to have seen people make a lot of good and bad choices. And you've probably made a few yourself. And you begin to see that wisdom lies in these choices. So, experience tells us that if wisdom is the ability to make godly choices in life, it is not something that's theoretical and abstract. Wisdom is not found in old mystics sitting on top of mountains with blank minds until shafts of light come in. That's not what wisdom is. Wisdom is very practical. It is everyday people making real everyday decisions because they're faced with choices. Wise people are often portrayed in life as sort of an elite type of status. And it's probably true because there just aren't a lot of people around. Even the Bible recognizes that some people have more wisdom than others, and that some people have devoted themselves to seeking wisdom enough that they can be called wise. The Bible itself does that. But that doesn't mean that wisdom has to be some elite status that only the few people can ever find. God didn't intend it to be that way. Wise people in the Bible are portrayed as being very practical, not just theoretical. People who are able to sort through the options that life gives them and then make choices that will produce the desired results. Wisdom is very real life, every day. That's why it is so important. How important is it? Let me summarize it this way in a wise saying that I read. We make choices, and then our choices make us. We make choices, and then our choices make us. That's the way life works. When God told Israel, I set before you life and death, blessing and cursing, choose life that you may live. When you read the history of Israel, when you read the history of anybody's life, their life consists of the choices that they made, and then afterwards those choices defined their lives. In so many ways, good and bad. That's worth getting down and really committing to memory. Some decisions are made daily. Some you make once in your life. Some you make maybe a few times in your life. Daily, we decide when to get up in the morning, what we're going to do first, what we're going to do, what we're not going to do, how we're going to talk, how we're going to speak to people, what we're going to accomplish, when we're going to start things, stop things, what we're going to eat, where, who we're going to associate with. Everything we do is a result of decisions. Some are made maybe once in a lifetime. Who you're going to marry. Big one. Some are made not very often, but a few times, such as your job, where you're going to live. Big, big choices with long-lasting consequences. Some are minor. Some are life and death. But every day we have those choices. We make our choices, and then our choices make us. We live with the consequences. Here's another wise saying that's worth getting down and committing to memory. We are free to make our own choices, but we are not free from the consequences. We are free to make our own choices, but we are not free from the consequences. That's why wisdom is so important. No matter how old you are, no matter how old you are, it's so important. We choose what, when, how we're going to do what we do in life. One of the marks of maturity is taking ownership of that. One of the marks of maturity and growing in wisdom is taking ownership of our choices. Good and bad. It's one of the ways to grow in wisdom. If we make choices that are rash, spur of the moment, emotionally based, maybe foolish, we own it. We own it. It's a big part of maturing to come to personal accountability. I remember watching one parent one time who was in our church area, and they had a saying whenever their kids would get in trouble and they would come out with the thing that kids always say, I didn't mean to. The parent would always say, come back at them with, yes, but you didn't mean not to. Maybe you didn't mean to, but you did not mean not to either. And that's why you did it. And what they were doing was teaching that child to own it, to own it, to not make excuses, lame excuses. It's very important to own it. We own our choices. We own our lives. When that reality sinks in, that usually serves as motivation to say, I really need to be a wiser person. Since I own it, I need to be able to have the wisdom to make good decisions. Proverbs 22, verse 3, illustrates how important this is. Proverbs 22 and verse 3 says, a prudent man, it's another synonym for wise, foresees evil and hides himself. He foresees something, has that discernment, and hides himself. But the simple pass on and are punished. Hate that punishing part. You ever done something dumb and say, oh, I should have seen that coming. I should have seen that coming. Oh, we've all said that. Probably if I'd just been a little wiser. Here's a big question for all of us. What do you foresee coming in the future for which you will need wisdom? What can you foresee coming in the future for which you will need wisdom? Let's say you're 15 years old. Can you look down the road and say, okay, there are some things coming that I know it's coming. It's unavoidable. I'm not dreading it. I just need to be prepared for it. When you're 20, when you're 30, what do you foresee coming in the future? When you know the right choice can be a blessing, the wrong choice can curse me forever if I'm not careful. The word evil is a very broad word. It ranges from bad or sad or troublesome all the way to terrible and evil. But it basically means negative results. So, looking down the road, what do we foresee? Can we foresee? Can we look down the road and see things in life that we say, you know, I can prepare for that if I have some wisdom? You can be. Now, how do we prepare for wisdom? How do we get wise? There was once a man whom God inspired to start a project. He gave him a project to do. This man was smart, and he was well educated, but he was also wise. There's a statement about him in this project in Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 9. It says, moreover, because the preacher was wise, he still taught the people knowledge. Yes, he pondered and sought out and set in order many proverbs. Solomon wrote the book of Ecclesiastes, and that's to whom it's referring. The preacher sought to find acceptable words, and what was written was upright, words of truth. So the project Solomon started was to collect these words of truth and to discern whether they were true or not true. Just because something is a proverb in life doesn't necessarily mean it's true. But he filtered all of these and he collected these proverbs, and it was preserved for this very reason, for us, so that we might be able to start getting wisdom. The book of Proverbs is a gold mine. It is a gold mine. In this book, you will see how to understand people. You'll be shown things about how to discern situations, things about character in your own life, what Mr. Lollier was talking about. Those 3 points, they're all in the book of Proverbs as well. How to succeed in making godly choices, how to apply truth in various situations that are common to everybody. The Bible is full of this, full of these things in the book of Proverbs. So now we come to, I told you we would come to some very practical takeaways. Literally, they are takeaways, because I want you to take something away from today, take it home, and do it. Your own project. A project similar to Solomon's, except just digging a little deeper. going with what Solomon started and taking it further. And it's something that I urge everyone to take home and do, but I especially urge the parents, the teens, and the preteens to do this and to do it together. It's a voluntary thing. I'm not going to be calling people up, checking on you to see if you're doing it. No one will do that. I'm not going to give you the silver bar. In fact, I'll take temptation away. I'll give you something better today. Give this to you to take home today. Think of what I'm going to give you as a project. Think of it as an investment. I hope you will think of it as an investment. Do this, and you will come out on the other end with something far more valuable than whatever silver will be Monday when the markets open, at whatever the spot value is. I guarantee you it will raise your wisdom rate. It will pay off. This project is called 31 Days to Uncommon Sense. 31 Days to Uncommon Sense. The phrase common sense, it started out originally being common sense. But the more I thought about it, no, it's not very common. What people call common sense is one of the most rare things today. So it's really uncommon sense. The type of sense described in the 31 chapters of Proverbs is rather rare in the human experience. Wish it was more visible, but it's not. What a lot of people call common sense, many of us would call just being wise. Having some wisdom about things. There are four parts to this project for you today. Part number one, it's going to be a little bit daunting. I want you to write down these words. Write them down. I'm going to leave this up so you can have plenty of time. We can put it back up after services are over if you need. But write down these words. Anger, child-rearing, correction, counsel, encouragement, envy, foolishness, forgiveness, friendship, gossip, hard work. Hatred, honesty, humility, judging, kindness, laziness, leadership, love, lying and deceit. Marriage, mercy, money, my mouth, or it could be words. Pride, righteousness, self-control, self-righteousness, tactfulness, trust in God, and wisdom. Now, while you're writing these down, write with your hand and listen with your ear. In other words, multitask with me for a minute as I go through these other steps. Step number two, these words all have to do with common issues of life. These are common things we all deal with all the time, and they can be big issues, big things. These are some of the places in life where we need the most wisdom. Once you have these 31 down on your list, step two, pick five of them. Pick five of them that you would like to have more understanding and wisdom. Five of them for which you would like to have more understanding and wisdom. Now think it through carefully, choose carefully, but pick five. Pick five of them. Step number three. For the next 31 days, carefully read one chapter of Proverbs every day with these five areas that you picked in your mind, focusing on those five areas. And whenever you see anything that you read that may pertain in one way or another, in principle or directly, to one of those five areas, arrange your notes in some way where you write down which scripture it is, and maybe do it like a journal. Make some notes about it. Why does this, what does this have to do? Let's say you pick the first one. Let's say, okay, anger. I need to have some wisdom about my temper, you might say. Okay, if you find something, write down the proverb. And what does this tell me about anger? About where it comes from, or about how to handle it, how to avoid it, how to overcome it, whatever. Either directly or indirectly, whatever it says, whatever you find. There will be some days you won't even find a scripture in a chapter that deals with one of the five things, but you will find a scripture that deals with one of the other ones. But they will be there, because all of these areas came out of the book of Proverbs. They are categories of life that the Proverbs deal with. The next step, this is the fourth step. For parents, teens, and preteens, talk about what you're learning together. Talk together about what you're learning. Now, you can work out how you want to do this. Maybe every day, every other day, maybe once a week, maybe Friday evening. Whatever you work, whatever works best for your family. But spend some time where you sit down and you compare notes. And you just talk about things that you learn. Scriptures that came to mind. If you think that checking in with your parents is some sort of gimmick to force you to do this project, that's mistaken. That's not my goal at all. My goal is for the preteens and teens to engage in some conversation and thought with one of the most consistently overlooked and underrated resources of wisdom in the life of a child. And that is their parents. But parents also have to gain wisdom to know how to communicate this with my teen. It's a great exercise for doing this. And it's not just teens. It can include grandmothers, grandfathers, doesn't matter. Four steps at this project. There are 31 topics listed here. There are 31 chapters in Proverbs. There are 31 days in most months, including the one we start tomorrow. I guarantee you, if you do this for 31 days, it will jumpstart your quest for wisdom. It will put you on a springboard for learning and growing as you target increasing wisdom, getting wisdom. And with all of your understanding, getting understanding, it will benefit you greatly. At the end of 31 days, you can rinse and repeat. You can pick another five. In other words, it doesn't have to end. You can go through these proverbs again. What you're doing is you're digging into grasping what God has put here for us. There's only one catch, and that is this will work only if you do it with your heart. You got to have your heart in it. It can't just be homework. It's got to have heart. And maybe one last step. When you get some time someday, let me know how it went, would you? I'd like to know. You will discover something that's very important and fundamental for life. And that is, you don't have to be a deep, shrewd thinker. Someone who has unnatural, philosophical, Socratic-like skills that very few people have. Someone who has an uncanny insight in order to be wise. The average Joe can be wise. The average person can be wise. Can a child be wise? Relatively speaking, I have seen children, I've seen teenagers, I've seen young adults who somebody will say they're wise beyond their years. And what that means is they're wiser than you would expect somebody to be at age 20. Or age 10. It's a growth thing, of course, and it never ends. But a child can be wise if they are taught, and if they are of a willing heart, and they obey. Even a child learns to make godly choices. And making godly choices is wisdom. That's wise. Can an uneducated person, I'm speaking of a formal education, be wise? I've known of people in the church who didn't have more than an elementary school education and were some of the wisest people I knew. Very knowledgeable about life. People who made right choices. Remember, wisdom is different from intelligence, and it's more important. These were people who understood the value of these proverbs. As you go along the way, do what God says in James. If any lacks wisdom, do what? Let him ask, and God will give it. There are some prayers we go to God with, and we don't know what his answer is going to be, but he says, with this thing, if you ask for wisdom, I'm not going to withhold that from you. Just don't doubt. And then the second thing is do your part, because God can easily turn to us and say, I'll give it to you. In fact, I already have. Don't pray your prayer to God, God, give me wisdom, and then just sit back in your chair and wait for it to fall into your head. We may have to ask and seek and knock. It's in here. This is the great place to start. It's why God gave us the book. If you will be on a quest for wisdom, a quest for uncommon sense, if you want to get on that quest, it's right here. It's right at your fingertips. All you have to do is ask for it, dig it out, ponder on it, meditate on it, and then seek to live and obey those words and determine to engage in a lifelong pursuit of wisdom.